Hi, this is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and I welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. This week, I'd like to begin with something a little different, but before we do, our focus text this week is Luke 9:22, where it says, "The Son of Man," this is where Jesus says to his disciples, "The Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, chief priests, and scribes, and be killed." So let's start with that something different. I want you to listen to an imaginary story. Once upon a time, there was a God who sang a world into existence. He loved this world and its people, but these people, over time, through no fault of their own, became afraid. They began over time to believe that this God who had made them, he did not like them. They began to believe that he was angry with them. They came to believe that God even hated most of them. Not all, but most. Because of these beliefs, they eventually became afraid of each other as well. These people were afraid, very, very afraid. They not only feared this God, but they also feared one another. They looked at each other with suspect. Days began to be spent endeavoring to discern whom it was that God hated so that those who deemed this to be true could hate them also and thereby invoke some possible favor from this God. As fear turned to hatred, hatred turned to anger, and anger ultimately turned into rage, murderous rage. It was when this world was at its darkest ebb that this God dreamed up something daring. He would dare to do the impossible. Would it work? Some believed that even this God didn't know for sure. It would be risky, really risky, not pretend. He would come to them in disguise. He would turn their entire system, social system, on its head. He would embrace all, loved and revered, as well as the hated, feared, and scorned alike. He would simply love radically, inclusively, daringly, and somewhat dangerously. This would unsettle everything, top down, upside down, and then it would happen. If it worked the way he planned, they would turn on his threatening love, this love that challenged and threatened to change everything. This social system, remember, was how they provoked the favor of God. Their life, their security, their assurance, what defined them, everything for them was bound up in this. How would they respond? They would label him as their ultimate enemy. They would let loose their murderous fear on him. Yet how would he respond? Having loved them, he would love them to the end. And if this worked, he would do one final thing that would pull back the veil and show every one of them who he had really been the whole time. This would change everything. It would banish the lies, illumine the hearts, and set the world right once again. Would it work? If only God knew, but they would be worth the risk. They would be worth risking it all. This week, I want to take a moment and talk about conduits. Jesus believed that he would be a conduit of God himself. You can find this in John 12 and in John 17. And Jesus also understood that God would be taking on their mutual enemy, the real enemy, who would be using humanity as his conduit. Now remember, this humanity that the enemy's using was the object of the Father and Son's love and affection. So how do you defeat an enemy that's using your loved ones as a weapon against you? In light of last week's 50th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream, I'd like to quote at length a Christmas sermon of King's from the winter of 1967. King wrote, "I have seen too much hate to want to hate myself. And every time I see it, I say to myself, hate is too great a burden to bear. Somehow we must be able to stand up against our most bitter opponents and say, we shall match your capacity to inflict suffering with our capacity to endure suffering. We will meet your physical force with soul force. Do to us what you will, and we will still love you. We cannot, in all good conscience, obey your unjust laws and abide by your unjust system, because non-cooperation with evil is as much a moral obligation as is cooperation with good. So throw us in jail, and we will still love you. Bomb our homes, threaten our children, and as difficult as it is, we will still love you. Send your hooded perpetrators of violence into our communities at the midnight hour, and drag us out on some wayside road and leave us half dead as you beat us. And we will still love you. Send your propaganda agents around the country and make it appear that we are not fit, culturally or otherwise, for integration, but we will still love you. But be assured that we will wear you down by our capacity to suffer. And one day, we will win our freedom. And we will not only win our freedom for ourselves, we will appeal to your heart and your conscience that we will win you in the process. And our victory will be a double victory. You see, from Jesus, Martin Luther King Jr. had learned to look on his enemies not as the real enemy, but as simply victims too of a systemic evil, to look at them as conduits of what the real enemy was doing. Martin Luther King had learned from Jesus to look at the people who were attacking him as being held in captivity to evil. They were those who were to be won over from the real enemy and the systemic evil over to the cause of truth. But where exactly could King have discerned this from the Jesus story? Now, I believe this is exactly what the closing week of Jesus' life was all about. How do you win your loved ones away from the real enemy and his systemic evil? The process really is not easy, but it's very simple. And it's the same every time. There's three steps. It's rooted and something original to the ethics of Jesus, and it's called enemy love. But these three steps, some people sum up these three steps as nonviolent non-cooperation. The first one is you provoke the system of evil. The second step is that the system then responds violently towards your provocation. And then thirdly, you bear that violence. You bear that hatred, that sin, so to speak, their sin against you in your own body, choosing to love nonetheless for it. And through the power of nonviolence and the power of unchanging love, you pull the veil off the very system itself, hopefully winning the very ones held captive to that system away from that evil, and through empathy toward you to the cause of yourself, their victim. In short, you seek to overcome evil with good. And it's the same in every era that Jesus' example is followed. Now, I'm going to give you three examples, but there's so many more out there. There's a documentary I also want to recommend this week called A Force More Powerful. And if you can find it, it is well, you can Google it, but if you can find it, it is well worth the time it takes to watch it. But remember, the steps are three, one, two, three. The first one is provocation. The second one is the violence by the system in response to your provocation. And then thirdly, your response of nonviolent love to their violence. You find this in the Jesus story. In the last week, Jesus cleansed the temple. That was step number one, the provocation. Step two, the temple police came and arrested him and ended up in his crucifixion. And step number three, Jesus responded with forgiveness, with nonviolent love the entire time. You find it with the history of Martin Luther King Jr., which we celebrated last week, with the provocation being sit-ins and freedom rides. The violence of the system was the beatings and the imprisonment that took place as a result. And then the third step was the nonviolent responses and the enemy love exhibited by King and his followers. You can find this also in South Africa and in India with Gandhi, who accredited the methods he used. He said he had meditated for 2 hours every day on the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus' teachings, and this is where he got it. Step number one, you have the salt marches in India that led to imprisonment and beating, and then you had the response of nonviolent love in South Africa, where Gandhi originally experimented with Jesus' teachings. He was the burning of the passports there in South Africa, which once again, step two was the violence of the system being exercised in Gandhi's imprisonment and others, and then their nonviolent response. If you want more information on these three steps, I want to recommend for you a presentation called A New Way, and it's in the New Life Unlimited series. You can find that on our website at renewedheartministries.com. You see, the perplexity was never how we could make an angry God loving again through some kind of appeasement. Rather, the perplexity, the question, was how a loving God was going to make us good again through becoming the victim himself of our violence. We would be the conduit of God's enemy. Jesus would be the conduit of the Father. Both of them would meet on the cross. And Jesus said in John 12:31, "Now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be driven out." Heart group application this week, number one, remember the cross to the original followers of Jesus was viewed not as, it was viewed as something Jesus did for them, but never something Jesus did instead of them. They believed that they too were called to embrace Jesus' way, his cross, as putting the world right again, forming human society once again into the image of love rather than fear, hatred, and violence. And in light of this reality, I want you to ponder the following text. The first one is in John 18:11. Jesus said to Peter, "Put your sword back into its sheath. Am I not to drink the cup that the Father has given me?" Mark 10:38, "Then Jesus said to him, 'The cup that I drink, you will also drink. And with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will also be baptized.'" And Luke 9:23-24, "Then he said to them all, 'If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves, take up their cross daily, and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will save it." And the last one is in Romans 16:20, where Paul wrote that the God of peace will shortly crush Satan under your feet. Number two, I want you to go back and prayerfully reread this entire e-site. I want you to write down any thoughts, any questions, insights, or perplexities that surface as you, with Jesus, meditate on the cross, not as a means of changing God, but as God's means of changing the world. And number three, share with your heart group this week what you've written down, and respectfully and openly encourage one another to keep following Jesus and his unique way of enemy love and forgiveness of healing the world. Remember, if anyone builds, this is from Paul in Corinthians, if anyone builds on the foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, the work of each builder will become visible, for the day will disclose it, because it will be revealed with fire, and the fire that will test what sort of work each has done. If what has been built on the foundation survives, the builder will receive a reward. If the work is burned up, the builder will suffer loss, but the builder will be saved, but only as through fire. Do you not know that you, and this you here is plural, remember, like a heart group, you as a group are God's temple, and that God's Spirit dwells in you. Remember, Jesus didn't come into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. Wherever this finds you this week, keep living in love, loving like Christ, till the only world that remains is a world where love reigns. I love you guys. I'll see you next week.